Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
What are we going to talk about?
We're talking about how horror movies affect your body.
Oh, well, haven't we already done the topic?
It's interesting that you ask because I'm raising it from the dead! Ooh.
And this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
podcast where we answer the questions you never thought to ask.
I am Nick Wood.
And I'm John Beacon.
And today we have a very special guest to help us celebrate our second week of
October month.
Thank you. He is half of the podcast Kill by Kill, which is, I'll let you describe the podcast. With us today is Patrick Hamilton.
Hello, greetings and salutations, Stranger Still people.
Will you tell our listeners about your podcast real fast, just so we can get a feel for who you are?
Sure. Kill by Kill is dedicated to celebrating the least discussed component of any horror film, the characters. So we unpack all the gory details of a horror movie, usually Friday the 13th, exactly as the name suggests, Kill by Kill, mm-hmm. in the hopes that a camp counselor's untimely end is just the beginning of the jokes we can make about them.
Perfect.
Jeez.
That's brilliant. It seems like you've done that a couple times.
Yeah. Once or twice, and I also write copy for a living. So, yeah, my brain works that way.
Very nice.
I heard that, and it felt like I was seeing the band live, like you were performing it.
Yeah.
I screwed up so many times, I can't even tell.
I also want to say, I started listening to your podcast before I had ever seen any Friday the 13th movies,
mm-hmm.
and I got 3 episodes in, and I was like, maybe I should go watch the movies.
So we're your starter drug. Like I, the first one is sort of free, and uh-huh. I was tempting you to the dark side.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's kind of what happened to me too. I think we had a Facebook conversation about it a while back.
I think I've watched 3 now.
I watched 1 and then watched and listened to an episode.
1, 2,
and
3.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news is that after 4, you can legitimately stop, and you'd be fine.
Really?
Oh, great. Bad.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's highlights and lowlights after that, but the core, you know, thing about Friday the 13th is really contained within those first 4 movies. The fourth one, I personally often say, is the platonic ideal of a Friday the 13th film. It's where all the various ideas and tropes crystallized into a perfect little product. And while it may not be the wittiest and it may not be the scariest, it is the goriest, and it contains the most Corey Feldman.
most Corey Feldman per hour.
Yeah, that almost makes it the scariest at that point.
From tip to toe, it's a Corey Feldman.
So let's talk about, this is related because the episode, as you know by the title, is we're going to be discussing what horror movies do to your body. And one thing that, I guess this isn't directly related to that, but I have a question for you, which mm-hmm. is, why is the hockey mask and, like, his magical powers the icon of Jason when that doesn't come into play? Like, all of that comes to play in, what, the 5th movie?
It's the 3rd movie is when he actually receives the mask.
Right.
And it would, you know, Rodney Asher, who's the director of Room 237 and The Nightmare, said on our podcast that it would have been very interesting if the film series had taken on the mantle of changing his headgear every single time.
Yeah.
What new mask could he have worn? I think that would have been an interesting what if. As to why it is so iconic, I think it sets itself apart. In a way, I think people are somewhat programmed to put a face to things, mm-hmm. and therefore, because Jason's face is often the last reveal of, you know, like, what craziness has been happening underneath that mask this time is what the audience says. And so with that, because that design morphs and changes over time, the one consistent is the hockey mask. It's just the sort of, because he's not a big emoter.
Yeah, like, I guess that's fair too.
You know, yeah. He's not like Freddy where there's a personality. And,
he's just a stone-faced killer.
Right. And, you know, you can often debate, you know, what's more entertaining, the sort of the shape version of this archetype in Halloween or Jason. But they are, you know, I think there's a lot more mythology into why the mask works in Halloween. Mm-hmm. And whereas the hockey mask is just so iconic, it had only really come up in one other movie before this, which was Alone in the Dark, which is a great Jack Sholder film that's very little seen, but it's, if you ever get the opportunity to, it's actually quite good and features a lot of "Hey, I know that guy" people in it.
I know the video game.
Oh, this is much different.
Okay.
This is more of a Siege or home invasion type thriller.
Oh, that's way different. Yeah. Gotcha. I have a question for you that I like to ask fellow podcasters. How did you land on the topic for your podcast? Like, it's, to me, it's so specific. Like, like, not in a bad way. It's just like, I would never think to make a podcast like that. So how did you get your foot into that?
I was desperate to talk to somebody about Friday the 13th who would talk back.
Yeah.
My wife tolerates my love of horror films and loves to participate on occasion, but really does not want to discuss it at length.
Yeah.
And in, I think, 2009, The Guardian had an article that had referred to the Friday the 13th series as cozy horror, that because the rhythms are so ingrained in it that it's comfortable to watch. It's like slipping into an old shoe.
That's interesting.
Like the cozy horror sort of subgenre in paperbacks. And the sort of soup du jour at the time was minute-by-minute podcasts, which I enjoy listening to, but I had no desire to participate in myself. I couldn't imagine a less fun time than watching Friday the 13th minute by minute. And the sort of release schedule that goes along with that sort of podcast. And so therefore I thought, well, what if I made it, you know, kill by kill?
That's a good turn.
And
I love that.
and then we were off to the races. Once I sort of hooked up with Gina and pitched her the idea, you know, we tossed around different ways of doing it. We tried to talk about every episode being one person, but so many of the characters are tied to one another or often have their penis inside the other person that it's very difficult to separate them. And so we started taking them in batches, and it just sort of, you know, snowballed from there. Every show develops its own language and mythology as it goes on, and ours now has, you know, things like Get Bunked and Friday the 13th Disease. And, you know, it all sort of coalesces, and every guest always brings something new and exciting. And I love having people on who are horror experts and complete Friday the 13th neophytes. It's a great mix.
Good stuff.
I love it.
Yeah.
So should we talk about what horror movies in fact do to your body and the horrible things you must be suffering at this point?
Oh,
from having watched so much.
Some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder, which I think even mentioning out loud, considering people who actually suffer it, is somewhat circumspect as far as humor is concerned. But let's go for it anyways.
Yeah. But let's not leave out on the lighter side all the chuckles that you get out of those movies for your chiseled abs.
Yes,
yeah.
All right.
So I think we should start where fear begins, which is
the Abdubla Oblongata.
Your
brain.
Oh, well. Your thinky
second
box.
Second take. Your thinky box.
Yeah.
I like that way better. It all starts in this.
Your flesh computer.
Your flesh computer, this ancient part of your flesh computer.
Mm-hmm.
And evolutionarily, the reason we scare are for two reasons. I know we talked about this before in last year's episode. But first, we either voluntarily or involuntarily scream or yelp out of fear, and that's to alert our social group that there's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Or let the killer know that that's where you're hiding.
Yeah. And you just can't hold it in anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, or you're like, man, this movie's how long? I'm really hungry. I want to get killed off.
I want to hit that craft service table.
Yeah.
Secondly, the brain's main goal is to keep our body alive, because without a body, the brain doesn't have anything.
It doesn't do very well. We'll say that.
Oh, codependent much?
Yeah. Not as well as it could be. Yeah, it's very dependent on the body.
I don't want to know what goes on in your body. But so anyway, our brain will kick in our fight or flight response to keep us alive. And we've talked about that many times before. We'll get into it a little bit more later. But fear signals first go straight to your thalamus.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the thalamus does, John? Or Patrick?
The thalamus is a little gland that produces an Insectilia butterflies. That's a Latin name. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to go science on you. But it actually produces and hatches and has cocoons for the butterflies that fly to your stomach.
See, I thought a thalamus was a thermostat for the Malamute that's inside all of our bodies.
Which is adorable.
Yeah.
Both of those are pretty adorable explanations. No, it's... The thalamus is this little, I think it is a gland. It's like inside your brain.
Uh-huh.
It's in charge of, it's not a gland. It's in charge of sensory interpretation. It's that center of your brain. And the fear signal goes through the thalamus, is converted to a neurotransmitter called glutamate.
So it's like the artsy hipster of the brain.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I guess that's scary.
Yeah. It all just passed that along. Because then it passes it along to your amygdala. And what do you think the amygdala does?
Screams.
Is that?
Frights and flights and flights.
Yeah, frights and flights and flights and
flights. I mean, it sounds like a Godzilla villain, but yeah.
You're not wrong. What kind of Godzilla villain would that be?
Well, tell me what it does and I'll tell you what it does.
Well, okay. So it's in charge of memory, emotions, and survival instincts.
Oh, so it would be like a giant lizard that makes your memories scary. Spooky.
He shoots a wave out of his horn.
Yeah, dude. And then you remember scraping your knee when you were three and you get all tensed up.
Yeah.
So the main goal there is to tense things up. Being a giant monster doesn't really do it.
You can't run because you might trip like when you were three.
Well, it's like toxoplasmosis, right? You lull the subject into paralysis. That's not the word.
Yeah, paralysis.
Paralysis.
You freaking pro.
We'll do it live. So the reason I say that these parts of our brains are ancient is because they were there when we were Neanderthals. And if you subscribe to that, I don't know if you do, Patrick, I'm not going to assume, but on this podcast, me and John do.
No, I believe in the stork, but sure, believe your fantasy if you wish.
Fair enough. Sorry, we'll make this unique universe. Just imagine this is
a new
split universe.
All right. I'll roll with it.
All of this takes place in the Berenstain universe.
Yeah.
So Neanderthals didn't have complex emotions or memory, but they did need to survive much harsher conditions than we have now. They had lions and mammoths and
bears. Oh my.
Bears. Oh my.
Yeah. You're one of the first people to ever get past lions and tigers and not have to say bears after.
Yeah.
How'd it feel?
I feel like I need a plaque on my wall.
Got it.
We'll put it up.
So lions, tigers, bears, humans, scary Neanderthals.
Yeah. They
fire.
Yeah, they had much harsher conditions that they needed to survive in, so these parts of their brains formed first and have been with us ever since.
Uh-huh.
So as a result, these reactions between the thalamus and the amygdala are completely involuntary at this point in our evolution. So for me, I always tell people going into a scary movie, I jump at all the jump scares, and I used to feel embarrassed by this, but even if you know a jump scare is coming, you've seen a movie 10,000 times and you still jump at the jump scare, that's because
you're dumb.
You're dumb.
Yeah.
And our big dumb flesh box, or whatever we decided to call it, flesh computer, doesn't know that it's not 100% real, so those ancient parts of your brains are kicking in and making you jump or yelp or whatever.
Yeah, gross.
Which part of that?
Wait, I'm sorry, John. Are you under the impression that jumping is gross? What about it is gross?
Well, jumping's fine. It's the whole From Beyond styled flesh computers that are in your brain that kind of... You know, very oozy, very 90s, lots of goop.
Yeah.
Imagery. Pulsating.
Bad makeup.
Is a good, you know, is a good 90s
harsh
horror
pinks.
Word.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So
I'm all for jumping. Jumping's great exercise. Good for you.
Yeah. It's cardiovascular exercise. I think I mentioned it before. It's important to recap why we get scared. It's to kick in your fight or flight. And when that happens, our muscles get all tense. Our blood gets flowing. And we can use that to either fight or flight or flee from a threat. Back in the caveman days, like I said, we have lions and stuff. and a lot of those fears have stuck with us.
Of course, there's a third purpose. You know, you could also just aggressively squirt blood at your attacker.
Has that ever happened in one of the Friday the 13th movies?
Not on purpose. I mean, no one's really resorted to it as a defense. We have had people throw empty cardboard boxes to the side of their attacker. A lot of weak flailing and unsuccessful hiding with pumps.
With pumps?
Yes, white pumps. Oh, shoes, there's a lot of white pumps happening in the later.
I was thinking like oil pumps.
No.
Because I'm an idiot.
It's not a very industry-focused film series.
You know, it's funny. I work for a fashion retailer, and my brain went to oil pumps, not the shoes. Whatever. So where was I going with that? I already forgot.
Escaping your enemies.
Yeah, so our horror movies now really tap into that. Even the fear of the dark came out of the caveman times, or you see all these villains with sharp teeth. I know we talked about this last year, but it's worth recapping. The horror movies will tap into those fears to create this visceral experience within those ancient parts of your brain. The thing is, you know it's not real. Even when you're sitting there safe on your couch or wherever, our body does some funny, involuntary things, which is the point of this episode.
All right, Dad, geez, getting to talk.
Eventually, in every young person's life, your body starts to do funny things around horror movies.
It gets hair in places you never wanted it. Mm-hmm. Especially your ears.
You get a special tingly sensation.
Yep.
In your stomach, because you're watching a horror movie.
Yeah.
But, I got... yeah. I got the jokes today, John.
Okay.
Sit
down. I got these...
I'll write you a check.
I got a lot of great info from an article on Bustle.com. I know nothing about them, but this was a great article. Obviously, the first thing that happens to your body is your blood rate goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And when your blood rate goes up drastically, that's to help you run or fight, of course. It also increases your respiration, and you'll start breathing in more oxygen to, of course, take it to your brain. But what that does is it helps with decision-making. It can also give your brain that slowdown feeling. So if you're ever in a situation like a real threat, like a car's about to hit you in real life, and it seems like time slows down, that's because there's more oxygen in your brain and you're thinking faster. So it's like the Matrix in real life.
Cool. Why don't we have, like, fear energy drinks? That sounds rad.
It just makes you constantly scared.
Yeah, you
everything.
Drink something, it's just like, you read the ingredients and it says, ooh, spooky poison,
spooky
number one
magic.
Ingredient. Yeah, and then you get an adrenaline rush, like, I'm going to die, and you focus on good grades on your test.
Yeah. Of course, every article I came across when it talks about your blood rate, it'd be like, scary movies can actually kill you. And then in the article, it'd be like, if you have heart problems, scary movies can...
Just like really calm.
Yeah. Well, it's like the whole article's like, if you have heart problems, you should probably stay away from scary movies, which if you have heart problems, you probably know that anyway.
Well, yeah.
You're not going to go on
a roller.
Did
you read that article yesterday that I saw?
Uh-uh. How would I know?
Oh, my God. It was nuts. It said that clickbait can kill you.
Yeah?
And I had to click to find out.
Yeah? What was in the article?
I don't remember. I didn't read it.
So... Since your brain is overdrive and your blood's flowing, your eyes also move faster, which is pretty extraordinary. It's obviously looking out for immediate threats. Your eyes are darting from place to place, and it's also to keep up with the action in the movie, which is an added benefit of your body thinking it's going to die.
Uh-huh.
A bunch of chemicals are released as well. Of course, adrenaline. We all know the good old adrenaline that's released.
Love it.
I won't go into that too much.
It's great.
It's my favorite.
We just put that in energy drinks, right?
I think that exists, right? With an X?
Does it?
Extra-adrenaline?
Well...
I've drank that.
If you get too much adrenaline, that can actually, like, cause organ shutdown. I'll get into that later, but...
Is it illegal there or something?
What? In your heart?
In Oregon?
In Oregon?
1-2 finish,
I'm so
Patrick.
Disappointed. I'm so... So, you might also start tensing up if you're scared enough. I don't know the last time that happened to me, but this is due to noradrenaline, and this is released under stress, and it will cause your muscles to tense up. And this is supposed to make it so your muscles can react quickly and make snap decisions, but it can also make you freeze in place, which is kind of the opposite of what you want to happen when
You're trying not
Freddy
to die.
Freddy Krueger's coming after you.
Yeah, yeah, this is kind of what I was talking about with Friday the 13th disease. When people get into situations which they are facing imminent death, have a tendency to forget how to do common things.
Anything.
Like swim.
Literally anything.
Or walk the other way. Or hide.
Chew
or
gum.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or don't yell, oh my god, he's going to stab me in the heart and I'm going to die.
They always...
He's 300 feet away, but it's going to happen.
That's my favorite thing of the old, like every old horror movie. It doesn't have to be limited to Friday the 13th, but anytime someone's about to die, like they'll turn around and they'll see someone there and just go, ah! Arms and everything. It's mm-hmm. like, what's that going to do for you?
You're frightened and flightened, dude.
I guess so. So there's also this chemical called cortisol that's pretty not cool. It's a stress hormone that everyone refers to it as the stress hormone. If you have chronic stress issues, there's going to be a lot of cortisol in your system. When you're watching a scary movie, this stuff will come out. It's linked to memory problems and depression, but can also make repressed memories resurface.
So, okay, this is like a tangible, real hormone.
Yeah.
Can't we just remove it? What do we need that for?
Your body just produces
okay.
it.
There's I'm going to go get some kind of cool, like, I'm going to start a business that does dialysis for cortisol, and yeah. you just really chill the time.
Yeah, well, I thought it was funny. I watched like 3 horror movies in one day, and I went to work the next day, and my boss is like, what did you mean when you said blah, 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 blah? And I was like, I don't remember ever saying that in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. So maybe that's why. Maybe cortisol is why
yeah,
I couldn't remember. There's also this chemical called cortisol released. People refer to it as the stress hormone. So if you have chronic stress issues.
It affects memory loss too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
How'd you know?
Oh, I thought I heard that somewhere.
All right. Well, I guess that clears that up. So there's also this aspect of getting sucked into movies. So all this stuff is just natural reactions to being exposed to any frightful situation. Another article pointed out that when we're watching movies, our defenses involuntarily go down. The motor centers of our brain literally shut down just as a reaction of us watching the movie.
Yep. Like Patrick said, swim, turn around,
yeah.
walk.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
stupid.
Yeah. We are lulled into the sense of comfort by watching a movie that just shuts down. The interesting thing is that it can be overridden by those ancient parts of our brain, so we can still jump at a jump scare or grab our mouth or whatever because we're so scared. That's one of my friends
yeah, why
does.
Is that a reaction? I
don't know. But I went to go see It with a bunch of my friends. This is not the time I went with you. And she had this reaction that every time she was scared, she'd slowly raise her hand up to her mouth. It was the most hilarious. I saw it out of the corner of my eye. I thought it was the
yeah.
most hilarious
Ancient
thing.
Ancient Neanderthals used to have a big bee problem. It's that really sweet. That's where the word sweet tooth came from.
Oh.
Bees used to land on their teeth. So
and
they used to cover their mouths
honey down,
to keep
right?
the bees out.
Yeah. This all checks out.
Yeah.
This seems solid science.
It's science. It's in the new Testament of the Stork Bible. You're probably familiar, Patrick.
Oh, yes. I'm very well steeped in that.
those mouth bees will get you.
Mm-hmm.
I read a long time ago that apparently when you're scared, your earwax production goes up. I couldn't validate it for this episode. I tried, but I couldn't find it anywhere. And at the time, I remember thinking, what in our evolution was so scary that when we got scared, our earwax production went up? But okay. I assume it's like a reaction of one of these chemicals or something.
I hope so. I hope it's not some scary earworm or centipede or something.
Right.
It's because it's delicious, and that's what the tangible benefit afterwards is you're able to produce a lot of it and spread it on your toast.
Did we just accidentally get Shrek on our show?
Yeah, I think so.
Making earwax candles over there, Patrick?
Yeah, I would do an accent, but I'm terrible at accents. They all come out
that's
French.
Good.
Oh, I'm really good at accents. Like
they'll come
time.
Out French.
I mean, that's good. You could do a French Shrek. What would he be like?
Oui, oui. Yeah.
Get out of my swamp. Dirty yeah. animal.
Man's got to know his limitations, and mine is accents. That just does not register.
That's fine.
I just play it safe. I'm not from here. I'm not particularly from anywhere.
I just stay in my lane, which is drunk Christian Slater.
This is politically correct because it's nothing.
Yeah, that's no accent. It's all of them. Mm. Or nothing. I don't know.
Drunk Christian Slater.
The only other thing I wanted to say is that obviously our brain doesn't know what's going on the television. And that's why or the movie screen, whatever. And that's why we're still going to have those big reactions. Luckily, there's this thing called the parasympathetic nervous system. And eventually, our body will realize it's not in any danger. And that's when the parasympathetic nervous system kicks in.
Yeah.
Any guesses as to what that does?
Oh, absolutely, dude. So, pair of sympathetic, right?
Yep.
It's like two grandmas. And like, oh, it's okay, honey. Oh, you need a sandwich? Oh, you're hungry? Oh,
here's
do you want
sweater.
Something? Oh, do you need to eat? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I remember it. It calms you down, dude.
Yeah. It actually does. Yeah. So, one of the articles I'm working from goes on to say that if you have too much adrenaline, it's very bad for our heart. If we bombard our organs with it, not the state, your bodily organs, they can flat out shut down, which is bad.
Yeah.
How bad? Like, die bad or, you know, sleepy time bad?
On a scale from zero to dead, you'd be dead.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Max scale, huh?
So luckily, we have this parasympathetic nervous system. It's like a built-in safety valve to our body. So if we don't need that adrenaline, it's going to get rid of it. The reason it's called the parasympathetic nervous system is because it's apparently just like part of your spinal cord or something. It's just a few specific nerves that are in control of reducing this type of stress. And what they do is they release a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine.
Acetylcholine's right over there.
Acetylcholine. Nice. Hey, girl, acetylcholine.
They go to different parts of our brain and basically tell it to chill out. It's pretty neat. One article says that that's what keeps us from running, screaming from the movie theater when that knife comes down. Wee, 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 you know.
So you get a chill down your spine.
Yes.
To your pair of grandmas. And they're like, oh, you want some cookies? So it's okay.
I'm so glad you just bastardized my entire explanation into something
simple and easy.
Yep, super, super easy.
All right.
There's one last thing I wanted to talk about, and I didn't know where to fit it in, and that is that there's actually a genetic link or two to being more or less affected by scary movies, which is pretty fascinating. I wish we had this in last year's episode, but there was a study done in 2008 that linked some sort of genes relation to anxiety and how it affected your movie-going experience.
So probably risk-takers. Like, if you go skydiving, yeah, you're probably less likely to jump.
Right. If you have less anxiety towards fear, mm-hmm, like I have anxiety towards talking to normal people.
Yeah.
but not scary movies.
Yeah.
Whatever. So there's a genetic link there. There's also a study done in 2013 that said some people, when scared, dopamine is released. And we've talked about that before. You said something about Kanye when we talked about
it. Yeah, because it's dopamine.
Yeah.
Okay.
there's dopamine is a neurotransmitter that makes your body all happy, and it's also what leads to addictions. So when you're, like, smoking a drug, injecting it, whatever, it floods your brain with...
Sound like my dad.
Drug?
I know drugs.
Stop smoking that drug.
Hey, you put that drug down right now, kids.
Do I sound like a dad? I'm not a narc, I swear. Give me some of that sticky icky.
I
wanna Is that
go
what the
home.
Kids say? So, anyway, when you have some sort of drug experience, your body is flooded with dopamine, and that's what leads
yeah.
to addiction.
I can never track that Kanye's dopamine, because in this political climate, I'm just over him, too.
So, some people, when they're scared, this gets released, and others, not so much. So, to answer last year's question, why do we like scary stories, that might be a good explanation as to why. You people like you and me and... Patrick just have these dumb genes that are like, ooh, scary stuff. I'm all happy now.
Yeah.
So.
Or smart genes, dude. Come on. Now I mentioned Stuart Wellington once, and I can't get the word dude out of my mouth now.
I mean, dude? Certainly there's a psychosomatic fallback from this, in which the technical details basically boil down to, if you feel anxiety experiencing something that approximates the death that you fear, mm-hmm, actually, and living through it releases a sort of happiness, because I experienced that and I didn't die.
I survived, yeah.
Hence why people like roller coasters, hence why people like to go to scary movies. It is the safety rails that allow us to experience the fears that we have normally in a socially acceptable way, and therefore afterwards we're elated that we lived through the experience, that our fears were not borne out.
Right. And I feel like that at some points becomes like drugs. You become more immune to it, and you want to seek out more and more to get that feeling again.
That hot, yeah. What scarier, some, more brutal movies?
Some people might call those adrenaline junkies, but.
But even there's a level that's satisfying of just getting a repeat thing, yeah. You know, because you train your brain to release the dopamine after you survive the cortisol.
So it's not adrenaline junkies, it's dopamine junkies.
Yep.
Get it right, people.
Yeah, correct yourself.
Yeah. Take that, so, unnamed internet people.
Nobody, listen, it's fine. Nobody corrects each other on the internet. No one's going to say anything.
Now, everyone lets things slide.
So... What I just want to ask you guys, what scares you most in scary movies? What gets you the most? I'll start with you, John.
Okay, so I gave a lot of thought to this because I am not into demons because I don't buy into that at all.
Sure.
So it's not going to get me.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's something if it's more realistic. Mm-hmm. If you could get an invader, like an intruder, the right way.
Like Hush.
Something like that, but I kind of like it when it's more mysterious. Like you feel like there might be some kind of supernatural element,
so
even
like
if there's not.
The first Friday the 13th.
Sure, yeah. Where stuff's just going down, I like not knowing.
Yeah,
you know, not seeing the reveal or just tiny reveals.
I think that's. I can agree with that. What about you, Patrick?
I like all types. The things that tend to get and worm under my skin are home invasion. Those things are hard to deal with.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is face or hand damage. I have a real problem with.
So like, just like someone's face getting bashed in? Or
yes.
Like hands cut off?
It just triggers something inside me. And then the hand damage thing comes, like Amityville Horror, I don't think is a particularly great movie, the original 1979 original. It's more effective later on when you understand where people were at. In the real estate market in the mid-70s. Because there's a lot of real estate fear going on there. You know, there's a whole subplot about them losing a check for $1,500 and it freaks everybody out. And you're kind of like, why couldn't somebody write another check? You know? it just...
Don't bring logic to this podcast.
Right. But there is one sequence where one of the kids is looking out the window and she's like, hey, I'm up here. And the windowsill just slams down on that kid's fingers. And I think about that once a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think about it all the time. I don't think the rest of it's very scary, but that all that and one. Whenever other hand damage seems to come up, like in The Descent, that triggers me a couple different ways, but there's a lot of hand damage in there that I find insanely disturbing.
I want to see that again. I feel like that's a perfect example of a spooky movie, is this Descent. But I had...
What about the first Blair Witch? No?
I don't know. I guess because I watched it when I was so young and I did a spoof of it with my sister and my friend.
Yeah.
That we kind of were like this, not scared by it. Yeah. And we kind of... I also... My problem with being scared is me and my friends found a top 10 goriest movies in the world on IMDb.
It's gross.
And we watched all of them, and it was like The Audition and Cannibal Holocaust and The Men Behind the Sun and like just like all these weird foreign films. And I just, after that, I was like, I'm ruined now. I can't see anything, you know? But real story about hand damage that I always think of that goes back to me, and I'm not trying to make you cringe too hard. But you know those trunks that you close on the Toyota Camry?
Yeah.
That you close it and then crushes and slowly closes and like clicks
it's
in.
Like,
yeah. Tink. My grandma had one of those and she closed it on her fingers.
Ugh.
And it started slowly crushing her fingers as she was trying to pull them out. She got her keys, got it out, and she was cool. And she has no permanent damage at all. And she laughs about it, and I don't. And I think about that all the time now. Yeah.
The thing that always...
Sorry, Patrick.
He's cool living in the
It's
now.
Just proof to the pudding, man.
Yeah.
So the thing that always gets me is, like you said, the psychological stuff, but windows always get me. Because I had this absurd fear when I was younger. Even before I saw like It or anything or knew about It, I always had this weird fear that when I was walking by the window in my parents' what was it? It was like a family room? I don't know. It wasn't a living room because like we never used it. It was the piano room. How about that? The parlor? It doesn't matter. There was a window there, and I was always afraid... One day I would look out at it and there would just be a clown there.
Oh.
I wasn't afraid of clowns either, but I was always afraid that like there would just be a clown face right there and it would scare the ever-living crap out of me. So windows get me in movies.
Yeah.
It's not the most ridiculous thing. The tale I always tell people is that as a youngster, I was afraid of the Pink Panther theme. Not the Pink Panther, the theme, which is a very jazzy version of someone sneaking into your house.
That'd be the perfect home invasion movie.
Can we make that happen?
Yeah, dude.
Hey, okay. Before we get to our break and our plugs and Facebook questions, what kind of horror movie would you make if you had unlimited budget and, like, the producers were in the studio were like, we don't care what you make, just make it. What kind of horror movie would you make?
I'd make Friday the 12th, and it's a lot of driving to the campgrounds. Yeah. It all takes place in cars. And they run out of gas.
Yeah.
And then they
have to stop at the gas station.
They stop at the gas station. And then they go up to the creepy guy at the counter, and he's like...
There's a guy there. He's like, you're all going to die up there.
No, not yet. That's the next day. Sorry. This guy just says, like, oh, yeah, you need a key for the bathroom. And they go in the bathroom, and it's, like, dirty and dark.
Uh-huh.
And then they get back in the car, and then they go.
How about you, Patrick?
The thing that I...
hard to follow.
I'm trying to piece that together. I might need some yarn and an empty wall with some 8x10 cards.
It's like a buddy road trip comedy.
Yeah. My wife and I, on our first anniversary, we ended up trying to go down to Mexico. And I say trying because we had signed up for this thing that had natural hot springs, and you followed a specific route and you went off the beaten path, and then you're supposed to follow these signs. Well, it turned out that the signs were washed away by a rainstorm that had happened, and no one had replaced them. So we ended up getting semi-lost. We knew how to get back to where we were going. We just didn't know how to get to the place we were going to. And the sun went down. We already had camping equipment because we were about to go camping. And so what we ended up doing is just popping the f-ing tent and, you know, sleeping. Like, well, when the sun comes up, you know, we'll figure it out. Well, we start to hear an insane helicopter noise that never goes away. And it just sounds like there's an iron smelting plant very nearby. We couldn't quite figure it out. We wake up in the morning after a very restless night. I think I got 9 minutes of sleep. We wake up, I come out of the tent and look around, and we had camped in an impromptu graveyard. You know.
What?
The best kind. An unplanned graveyard, just a place where we bury dead bodies. We don't have to make it formal or anything.
Oh.
Something along those lines. That's the
next
kicker.
Next to a smelting plant.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
We never figured out what the noise came from. We did find a weird crushed glass sculpture on the ground with brown and green glass in various shapes. We never found the place we were going to. And at that moment, I told my wife, I love you, and I will take you anywhere in the world that isn't here.
Oh, my God. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. There's a second half to that one that I'm going to hold back on, but it's just as scary.
Well, now I kind of want to hear it. Should we save it for after our break?
Yeah, sure.
Or do you not want to tell it? It's fine.
No, I can tell it.
Okay, we'll save it because I want to tell you all about this movie I've been mulling around my brain because I have this dumb compulsion to lately take something that's horror themed but not scary, like Scooby-Doo or Casper or the Addams Family. It's horror themed but it's not scary, and I want to make it actually scary. So I want to make like a really scary Casper movie or a really scary Addams Family movie. That's my dream.
That would be cool.
There is a very scary Scooby-Doo alternative called Meddling Kids. That's a book that's fantastic.
What?
Yeah.
He just blew his mind. He
about
does a
former
podcast.
Former teen detectives who had a dog, and they have this hellacious experience, and none of them want to talk about it. And then they all meet up for an unplanned reunion, and things go awry from there.
Yeah. You don't know this about me, but my favorite show is actually literally unironically Scooby-Doo.
You and my son.
Your son is my new favorite person.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
I'm sitting in a room full of Scooby-Doo Legos.
Yeah, right, there's now. Legos up there. There's, like, Funko Pop. There, yeah.
Hey, man, Lighthouse one is a lot of fun to put together. I love how the skull pops
it's
open.
It's so expensive. I want it, though, but my wife would kill me.
Saved up for it.
He's on a Mystery Machine budget.
Yeah. The $25 Mystery Machine Lego set. Woohoo! Should we take a break and come back?
Sure.
Jason drowned. Mrs. Voorhees was killed, and Camp Crystal Lake is off limits.
It was a joke! It was just a joke!
Guys, I don't know if you just heard, but we had this guest on our podcast. His name is Patrick Hamilton, and I think he has a podcast.
You think about it?
Where can you find
you,
Patrick?
You've heard a rumor? Or
I've heard a rumor that this guy tale? Is on a podcast. Yeah. Yeah. Where can people find you?
You know, the Kill by Kill podcast is available at all your major outlets wherever podcasts are sold, on iTunes and Stitcher and the like. Or you can find us directly at cast.rocks.killbykill. We break down Friday the 13th movies. We also do one-offs and specials along the way. And when we're done with Friday the 13th, we're moving on to Nightmare on Elm Street. And
sweet.
Oh, yeah.
That one I have seen.
And then we're going to meet in the middle for Freddy versus Jason. And then we're free to go anywhere from there. But, you know, we'll take on your Saws, and we'll take on your Halloweens and your Final Destinations. Your Chuckies. We're going to hit them all.
I'm pretty excited. What's your publishing cadence? Like, what day can people find you?
We are fortnightly every other Friday.
Sweet. I don't know if I said this on the air or not, but I started listening to the podcast before I had seen any of the Friday the 13th movies, and I got like 4 episodes in. I enjoyed it that much, and then I went and saw the movies because I was like, I need to actually see these things. Yeah. So even if you haven't watched it or you don't like horror movies, I still say go listen to the podcast.
Can I share my personal story about it? Get a little real for a sec?
Yeah.
So I was close to Desiree's father, and he passed. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they had in common mostly was that they watched Friday the 13th when they were kids on Halloween every year. So after he passed, we started playing the game a bunch. We started watching the movies a bunch. Yep. We started like... And we got a DVD box set that was his, actually. So it's kind of a way that I kind of felt close to him still, even though it's something I'm experiencing new. So I kind of had that same feeling while watching Patrick's, listening to Patrick's podcast.
Yeah, just hanging out with a couple people.
Yeah, just people and talking about like this new world that is helping me get closer to a person that I knew, you know?
Postmortem.
Yeah, I think I love that story. The way people connect through things that others might find silly or they don't expect. My mother-in-law was the first mayor of Wisconsin. The first female. So excuse me. She was the first female mayor in Wisconsin.
The first female.
She's Eve. And she's an educator, and while very funny, she's more often very serious. But I discovered that she had never watched Mystery Science Theater 3000 before, and so we connected through that. I got her into MST3K, and now that's our thing. So having a thing is one of those things, is one of those wonderful byproducts of being a human being, that you're allowed to connect along those lines. It's pretty awesome.
It's a beautiful thing.
No, it feels great. And I mean, that's awesome. I remember you telling me about the Mystery Science Theater thing too. It's just goofiness, but it means a lot. And I guess with Kim, what really solidified everything was his final like joke or something that he would have thought was cool is he actually did pass on Friday the 13th.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's. I have a.
Which he would have thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to get out of that.
So, yeah, dig out of that hole, dude. An emotional...
How about I just jump out of the lake and pull someone in out of a canoe?
Sure.
Work?
Okay. No, if you want to find us, you know where to find us on iTunes. Leave us a review. I don't think we have any new ones. If we did, I probably won't read them because we have a guest on this week. But at Stranger Still and on Facebook, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, StrangersWillShow.com, et cetera. So, find it where you found this.
Yeah, you know you found this, so find it there. We've got some Facebook questions. Most of them are from... Actually, all of them are from Jason on our Facebook page. So we'll run through these. Some of them are geared specifically toward you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just based on horror movies. So the first one I have from Jason is Freddy versus Jason considered canon? And if so, what are the ramifications on the timeline, bearing in mind that the time jump required for Jason X?
It really depends on which canon we're referring to, because the Friday the 13th timeline is all over the place. It yeah. doesn't make sense from the word jump. From the moment they raised what is not my word, but a mongoloid, that's how it's how Jason's creator refers to him. From the dead, because he's supposed to die of drowning in a lake, and then all of a sudden he's back taking revenge. So already we have a problem. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense from that standpoint. Freddy versus Jason is fine. Like, who cares? From a Freddy standpoint, I think it falls in line with that, because they're so inconsistent in terms of what can actually kill him and what can't. I mean, technically, Freddy's Dead actually does finish off the series. New Nightmare is a completely different concoction altogether, which makes it one of the more superior sequels in the series.
An interesting fact about me and the New Nightmare is I started watching that before I had seen any Nightmare on Elm Street films. So I had no idea what was going on. I'm really bad at watching horror movies. It's whatever.
If people do want to know more, there's a book out called Slash of the Titans, which deals with all the 10 years of iterations it took to actually get that movie onto the big screen.
Really?
Yes. Oh, that's cool. It took forever. Yeah. For it to actually happen, and you can read about every single version of it in exhaustive detail.
Well,
he's got all kinds of stuff to sign up for. This is going to be our first recommendations for horror stuff that's all books.
Yeah,
unless you got a film you want to throw in there, man.
So far, so good. I mean, people who want to know more about details of how the Friday the 13th films were made, you can either get the book of Crystal Lake Memories, which is harder to come by than usual lately. Or there's a documentary that's about like 10 hours long, talking about all of them. Yeah, it takes up two Blu-rays, and
oh my God.
They go through it from the first one to through Freddy versus Jason and the remake, and talk about every single one in a very exhaustive detail with actors, directors. The only sort of interview about it that the executives at Paramount ever gave about it. So it's pretty interesting.
Cool. I don't remember what I was looking at, but I came across that a lot. No, I was trying to find if they were streaming, and I came across that documentary a bunch. I know it was 10 hours long.
It is streaming as of this recording on Shudder. If you don't have Shudder and love horror films, I would suggest it. That is a free plug for Shudder. Shudder, if you're hearing this,
if you want to pay him.
You want to pay me, I'm more than available to give you some play.
Don't Shudder worry. Rules, and I got on Shudder when Jeff Kowalski from Creepypasta last week. Yeah, he gave us his password because he signed up and
didn't want it.
So we put it in the podcast group, and I watched some weird Japanese machine gun arm movies.
It's really weird and really specific. We still got to get to the Spook Olympics, so I'll kind of rush through these.
Okay.
Jason also wanted to know, are there any significant changes to the brain of children who consume horror fiction versus those who don't? What about kids who consume real horror, e.g. true crime, like Dexter? He didn't say that, but I did.
Yeah.
I'll just say that I inadvertently saw parts of Psycho when I was at least 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
And accidentally watched Poltergeist when I was 6 or 7. and The Shining when I was in third grade, whatever age that is. And I turned out just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, good. I used to watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space when I was a kid.
I've never seen that.
My best friend's little brother had a sign up for a very long time in their childhood home that said death to all clowns. Even when they were trying to sell the house, he refused to take the sign down.
Oh, boy. picked up the clown-hating community, really jumped on that.
Yeah. There was one guy that came to look at the house, and he's just like, oh, this house looks... What is that? I'm not buying this home.
Anyway. And as far as... I was very intellectual about my horror consumption growing up, because I was not allowed to watch anything remotely cool by my parents. But my grandmother said, I will buy you any book or anything that you want to read.
Yeah.
Reading is cool. So I picked up a lot of Fangoria. And yeah, I awesome. Intellectualized the things that gave me nightmares. And that's then good. Caught up to the movies much later into my teen years than most. When I finally got a job at a video store is when I was actually able to start watching these movies.
Your parents can't say no at that point, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Jason also wanted to know why we thought Jason Voorhees is as popular as he has remained, and I think we answered that earlier.
There is an argument to be made that at the time of the film's release, you had a lot of generations of kids who had had their siblings killed in the Vietnam War.
Oh.
You know, what would be normally their prime time of life, and they were cut down. You have a big generation swath of this. And so to deal with the idea that most young people don't really confront, which is, no, you really can die, that the sort of scary movie boom of the late 70s was born out of that.
Wow.
There are other theories as well to it. You also have, you know, sociopolitical anxieties. You know, you had a generation gap that seemed like it could be the end of the world. I certainly dealt with a lot of nuclear war fears. In order to deal with outsized fears that are outside of your control, if you experience fears that are under, like you paid a ticket to go see them, that you then therefore exercise them.
Yeah. I think that's important context.
Mm-hmm. And to feed into that, I did not grow up scared of nuclear things until I was like starting to know about the effects that they have on humans in school and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's probably my number one fear in scary movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's real and it's still like
Maybe, I don't know if this was the case for you, but when I was growing up, the fear was around stranger danger. And now I feel like we have a lot of movies that are like Pennywise, where he kidnaps kids, and home invasion stuff and all that kind of stuff. And like Jigsaw, stuff like that, you know, where they're kidnapping these people and torturing them. And maybe that's manifested out of stranger danger of my childhood. I don't know.
It certainly, the socio-political view is the most predominant. Those who wish to want to know more about that should pick up the book Shockwaves, which deals with how the independent movie scene was basically born out of horror movies. That's right. Horror movies started the indie film scene, kids.
That's awesome.
That's great. I got one more from Jason here. He just wants to know, Jason has been to hell and space and even Manhattan. Of all places, whoa. Manhattan.
Him and the Muppets, huh?
Where would you like to send him next?
I think I would go with the prevailing winds. There seems to be a lot of chatter online of wanting to see a snowbound Friday the 13th, one which he operates
cabin
in the cold.
Fever.
Yeah, just as a different thing. We've seen a lot that'd of cool. summer or... what it's trying to portray as summer. They're more often or not filmed in the dead of winter, so you see a lot of breath on people who are supposedly enjoying a summer in New Jersey. So it would be interesting to actually lean into the fact that it's cold. I honestly believe that the formula for Friday the 13th is not about what you change in terms of what the environment. I believe it's the change in of the people that he stalks. Mm-hmm. I think you would get a lot of cachet out of if you, instead of thinking about this in giant film franchise terms, if you let a Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Shudder do, you know, like, we're going to green light four of these. Mm-hmm. And we're going to give it to filmmakers from completely different points of view and let them take cracks at it and lower the, oh my God, it's got to make it money, which ain't going to fucking do.
Yeah.
There you would get more interesting movies. If you had a Friday the 13th that was all gay men up at a cabin, you would get a very different movie. If you had one that was predominantly people of color, you would get a different movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you allowed those voices to explore this through their lens, it would be so much more interesting.
that excites me.
What if
me.
There was like one with like white girls in it, though?
Oh, you know, I mean, they're in everything. You'll get around. You'll always have one.
No, I think that'd be really fascinating, though. It's like, this is totally tangential, but there's a pack of Cards Against Humanity cards where they gave all these different artists the words that you can't say on George Carlin's, whatever words you can't say on television, mm-hmm. said, draw one of these. And there's all these weird interpretations of swear words and stuff. And I think getting that kind of view from a more, I don't know,
multiple people.
Yeah, I just mean like a new medium, an interesting medium that hasn't done something like that before. Give it to someone else.
You hear a lot of complaints of people online of, oh my God, I see the same things. Nothing's original anymore. It's mm-hmm. the same, the same, the same. And one of the big reasons behind that is you have people who look like me and talk like me and have all uh-huh. the same influences as me making the same movie over and over again. Mm-hmm. Because, like, we have very similar experiences. Yeah. We would get better films if we allowed a wider array of people to actually tell those stories, because we would see them through that particular prism, and you'd get something different.
I honestly could listen to you talk about horror movies all day, and I'm not like being sarcastic.
Well, thank you. Luckily, take that as a compliment. For that. I think you'd get bored real fast if you just let me go on and on and on.
I don't know how I got it out of my head, but it was Get Out that I was thinking of.
Oh.
That is a perfect example of reaching a new audience, because they literally used racism as fear.
Yeah.
In that, and it's just the perfect movie.
Yeah. So should we get into Spookalympics?
Sure.
That's the theme song that I just made up.
Okay, Elliot.
Now, I assume this is like Laugh Olympics.
Yes.
Yeah.
With all the Hanna-Barbera property mm-hmm. and everything. Speaking of, if you want to listen to a podcast about the Hanna-Barbera properties, you can listen to Limited Cell. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. It stars me and my dad, and we review every Hanna-Barbera cartoon produced.
Do you
what?
Smell that?
What?
It's like, it smells like a Glade plug-in, or like a... It smells like somebody plugged something.
Nice.
Okay.
No, so last week we suggested some scary things to each other. You suggested to me Repo the Genetic Opera.
I didn't even know how... Okay, so hold on a sec. I didn't know what we were doing. I thought we were just saying stuff, man. I didn't mean to put you through that. Repo the Genetic Opera is terrible.
I watched the whole thing just for this show, and it was not good.
Okay, so let's start doing good ones, maybe.
Well, I had suggested to you Goodnight Mommy, and what was your take on it?
I was working.
Yeah. And it's Austrian, so it's subtitled.
I don't mind that at all.
Okay.
I prefer that. Makes me pay more attention to it. Can't just look away and get distracted.
Yeah.
I think it was all right. I didn't really like it that much.
I really enjoyed
it. To be honest.
It, so
yeah, I know you did.
And we're fighting, and I'm looking for a new co-host, so if anyone's out there.
If.
Again,
though, I'm also like, I'm just desensitized.
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions for this week's Spook Olympics?
I'm going to get you with something a little goofier this time.
Okay.
That I think's more fun.
Okay.
And in it.
You have like four there where you looked at it like
I wrote
five, 15 times.
Yeah. Then why don't you read the top one?
From Beyond.
Yeah, I'm going to go with From Beyond for you.
Okay.
I think that should be pretty good. Okay. It's got a weird tone, and it's really just a silly movie.
Okay.
It's the movie the filmmakers in that group made immediately after Reanimator, and yep. It is the word psychosexual should only be referred to from beyond. It is pink. It is gooey. It is super weird. It will get under your skin, literally.
Yeah. Oh, this guy just sold it for me. No, it's worse than that. It's more sexual.
Okay. gross. Okay, I'll watch that for next week. Have you watched VHS?
Yes.
Have you watched VHS 2?
No.
You should watch VHS 2.
Oh, boy.
In particular, that middle section by the group that made The Raid. It's a longer segment, but it is perhaps the best segment of any in the VHS series.
Yeah. Go watch it. It's on Netflix, so go watch it.
Okay.
And we'll report back next week. Patrick, do you have any spooky suggestions that we can consume before next week's episode?
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest thing about this is trying to find, like, generally I always send people out to watch The Changeling. The problem is The Changeling is very hard to find.
Yeah.
It's just not available anywhere. So what is right now that I'll send people out to watch is Dead and Buried. And it is a film that was written by the pair that wrote Alien.
Sweet.
It is a small town Lovecraftian horror. It is filmed with a lot of blue filters. And features a lot of stalwart character actors, and is very, very creepy if you're in the right mood. And yeah, I love that one.
What was that called again?
Dead and Buried. It is currently streaming on Shudder and might be available elsewhere. It seems to float around quite a bit. The director also directed Raw Meat. Which is a great Cannibals Live in the Subway Tunnels of London movie, which is also available elsewhere. So if you like that one, check out Raw Meat as well, with Donald Pleasance chewing the scenery like a cannibal on a leg.
Oh, God. Cool.
Man, where do we hire you to write copy for us?
You got to have that network money. I don't work for cheap anymore.
Yep. I think that'll do it for us this week, unless anyone else has anything else.
Now watch a scary movie. Enjoy it. Go, in fact, go out and see a scary movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a weekend. I know it's hard for people. Listen, if you got kids, I know why you can't go. I get it.
Right.
It's hard. But if
I will say, oh, go on. Sorry.
But if you don't, like, the cinematic experience is probably going to dwindle in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. Then the one place that you really need to experience something with a group are not historical dramas. They're not Oscar bait. What you need to see with a group are comedies and horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you need the group experience. You need to become mass hypnosis. When Blair Witch was brought up, that's an example of mass hypnosis, where people mm-hmm. begin to see and experience things in an altered fashion, not because that is the way it is presented, but is because they are picking up on each other's fear of what they think is happening and are projecting that out into an entire room. The room begins to feel it, and everyone starts to freak out.
I'm cautiously going to say this because I might disappoint myself. In this episode, I don't know if it comes up before this comes out, but I want to go see Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
On Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I love playing with time, and I also love horror movies, so it seems like it's right down my alley. But yeah, go see it in theaters. Because mm-hmm. I went and saw, like, the new Blair Witch movie in theaters with my brother, and having that giant screen is, like, so much more effective than watching it on your iPad while you're going to sleep, like I did for Goodnight Mommy.
Yeah, or just the sociology of having those people there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I think we'll close it out on that note. That's a good note to end it on. So, without further ado, I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
I'm still Patrick.
Perfect. Yeah. This has been Stranger Still.
Yeah.